In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Betches Media presents...
Chrissy Teigen referred to Donald Trump as a pussy-ass bitch.
Look, he's a sick puppy. He shouldn't be there.
Well, I lost half a day of skiing.
I'm going to punch him out, and I'm going to go to jail, and I'm going to be happy.
The Betches Up Podcast.
A speaker has not been elected.
Hello, this is the Betches Up Podcast, where C-SPAN meets the group chat to help you process and laugh at the biggest topics in U.S. news and politics. I'm Amanda Duberman, news director at Betches.
I'm Elise Morales, comedian and writer of the Betches Up newsletter.
And I'm Millie Tamaris, comedian and sub video contributor.
Oof, the listeners don't know that we have recorded together podcasts every day this week, but I feel it. We're back.
Yeah. If you see an influx of interesting appearances and guests, know that they were all recorded this week.
Yes.
We work hard for our money.
We do. And if you listen to morning announcements, apologies, you might be sick of my voice, perhaps Elise's, as we've been covering that. So my voice might be a little tired today, but fortunately, we do have a guest joining for the last segment today to talk about what's going on at the Women's World Cup. Specifically, you know, the U.S. team seems to be struggling. And, I've seen a lot of talk about why that might be, what's behind that. You know, it's potentially some of the coaching, but also the other teams across the world are just getting better. So, Claire from Just Women Sports is going to join us for the last segment of the show, to talk through that. We will start very quickly with a number and then get to the main news. Today's number is 18, because for 18 years, Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau was married to his wife, Sophie, but the two have announced that they will legally separate. Hot, single, tall guy with that speaks French with Canadian citizenship? Watch out.
I do. It is going to be like, I don't know. When was the last time there was like a young, single world politician leader out on the scene?
Anthony Weiner?
Oh, no.
Would we call him a world leader?
Oh, no, no, no. You said world.
Graham?
You said world.
Oh, my. Yeah. I guess
you said world.
I did say world. You know, interestingly, Justin Trudeau's dad also was prime minister and also got a divorce while in office. I don't think he was young. I think he was old and his wife just like left him and the family and fucked off to New York City.
Well, I've said, I think on the podcast that my favorite niche conspiracy theory is that Justin Trudeau's real dad is Fidel Castro.
Mm-hmm.
Because I believe the Trudeaus were like swingers and stuff. Anyway, as I've said many times, Google Justin Trudeau, Fidel Castro, and just tell me there's not a resemblance.
There is absolutely a resemblance. There is a really great article in Jezebel about all of this, and there's some alleged rumors, but apparently Canada's libel law is a little stronger than the U.S.'s, so
yeah.
Like it was all redacted in the redacted, you know.
Wow,
what I mean?
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it is.
Has Dumois said anything?
Has Dumois
feel,
said
I feel
anything?
Like that's where the tea might be.
Yeah, they don't care about
Justin
libel
Trudeau
laws.
On, with a new flame at Via Carota.
Oh my gosh.
I have appreciated all the like Ariana Grande strikes again, like memes about it.
Absolutely.
I'm like, okay, who would be a good, should it be like a Canadian celebrity or like anybody? Is it like, because Avril Lavigne and Wiz Khalifa broke up. Or no, sorry, Tyga.
Uh-huh.
Avril Lavigne and Tyga were dating and they broke up. So I'm just saying, if they want to keep Canadian royalty, there
Avril,
you go, right. Justin. Avril.
Well, yes. And if he wants to spend some time with somebody who understands living under a conspiracy theory, she's
Avril
the one.
As well.
Yeah.
Yes. Because isn't there, there's one that she like died and was replaced with that, like,
and this is like a different one.
We should do a whole episode on this next time the news is slow. Just like our favorite conspiracy theories. I really like the Avril Lavigne is dead one.
Yeah. Like apolitical ones where it's like, they don't like, I mean, I guess Justin Trudeau, that's technically, but it's like, It doesn't have like a right left balance. It's just right.
Like, chaos. That Justin Trudeau's Fidel Castro's. I mean, there's some Cold War politics going on in that Justin Trudeau is actually Fidel Castro's son. But also, you know, famously, just as you promote that theory, I will promote not a theory, fact that Fidel Castro was very hot as a young person, mm-hmm. and so is Justin Trudeau, and something sticks. It's sticking on the wall.
There's not that. And you know what?
This pasta's there are cooked.
Not that many hot guys, unfortunately. So
in the world or in politics?
And certainly in politics. Good God. Joe Manchin and Justin Trudeau.
Joe Manchin, oh my God. Yeah. See, you bring it up just as much as I do. You bring up that you were sexually attracted to Joe Manchin.
Whoa.
Sorry, that he has charisma. Or as the Gen Z says, the Riz.
The Riz. That's exactly it. We can settle there. All right. We wish Justin, a fruitful re-entry into single life. I am sure he will do perfectly fine. I also like, after all the blackface stuff, like, I bet he's just like kind of a derp. Like, I don't really know if he has interesting things to say. I know he's the Prime Minister of Canada, but I can see him being like, honestly, a little bit of a himbo.
Yeah. Well, years ago, actually, Las Culturistas did a show that was like a competitive I Don't Think So Honey. Ooh. And I did I Don't Think So Honey Justin Trudeau, and that was basically my thing, is that I think that he's a little
kind of dork.
Yeah, I think mm-hmm. he's has Kenergy. I didn't know Kenergy. At the time that that's what I was saying, but mm-hmm, now mm-hmm. I that was kind of the argument that I was making.
Yeah. Let's get right into the main news now, which is, of course, Trump's latest indictment. It is finally here. This dropped on Tuesday, so by now you know that the former president has finally been charged 967 days since January 6th of crimes related to his role in trying to change the outcome of the 2020 election. He will be arraigned later today, which is Thursday in Washington, D.C. I was reading that like some people thought he might appear at this one virtually, but that he's expected to be there in person. So today is the day, 967 days after we all watched in horror on that afternoon and didn't know what to do with ourselves. It's finally criminal charges.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, now Republicans want to work virtually? Fuck you. Show up in person, bitch.
Something is really making me laugh about just the idea of seeing Trump on a Zoom. Like, totally.
Never seen that.
Him in the little box, like that like angry like face that he always has on is really making me laugh. Do we think he's Zoomed?
No, I don't.
That's
frankly.
So funny.
Like has he ever? Because I know Joe Biden was Zooming. Zoom.
No, never.
During the 2020 election, they were like, Biden's in a basement. Like, he was Zooming, but I feel like Trump was performatively not Zooming.
Right, because he also didn't give a fuck about the virus. So he was just out there.
No, yeah, he was actively, he had COVID at the debate. Yeah.
You have COVID. Do you want to just do this on Zoom? Absolutely not, no.
So I saw the Who Weekly live, and one of my favorite bits was different articles in the AARP magazine. Oh, and one of them was four steps to set up a new computer.
That is so sweet.
And, Trump is reading that. Mm-hmm. Like, Trump is, and step one was turn it on. So
I'm honestly having trouble imagining Trump using a computer.
He definitely types with two pointer fingers, but very slowly. Yeah.
Like, he definitely uses his phone, obviously, but I'm trying to imagine him using a computer, and I'm having a really hard time
walking around with a laptop bag. Like, he just doesn't do it.
Like, logging into his email, I'm just kind of struggling imagining.
He doesn't know his passwords for anything.
Well, Nauta is the one holding it all down. Well, and Dan Scavino, his former, there's something there about his former golf caddy also being his social media manager. I think it's similarly like just instead of a golf clubs, it's a computer that he follows Trump around. And opens a beer for him if he needs.
I've heard
whatever.
Enough about Hunter Biden's laptop. I want to know about Trump's relationship with his laptop.
I feel like it's still in plastic. Like he has it. He technically has a laptop, but it's not like he is not using a computer. He is on his phone.
I can't imagine.
You know what? And this is all fucking making sense, because that's why he was so appalled by Hillary Clinton's emails.
Absolutely.
Because he was like, what kind of sorcery is an electronic mail?
Absolutely. Has no actual idea what the server means. He's like, she certainly just dropped off a letter on a Russian's desk.
It's like witchcraft to him, where it's like, well, first of all, why can't we see the letter? Why isn't it physically there? Like, I think it's more of the blasphemy of an electronic mail than it is what server was on or whatever.
He spells email with a dash in it. Capital E dash mail for sure.
Well, and that's why he took the documents. This is all making so much sense, because he needs the physical documents. He doesn't care about a USB drive.
True. Like, he's about the physical.
Yes.
He could have taken a picture of these documents.
He doesn't believe. He thinks it's sorcery.
He needs the physical boxes of printed out papers. Wow. He needs. Mm-hmm. It's very... I think we're on to something. Does Donald Trump have a personal computer? I don't know.
Maggie Haberman, drop what you're doing. please investigate whether he has a PC, a Mac. we need to know. We simply need to know. As far as these charges, they don't relate specifically to the violence on January 6th, but the actions Trump took to try to keep himself in power. So the buzzwords from the four counts are conspiracy, lots of conspiracies, conspiracy to defraud the United States, and conspiracy to obstruct an official proceeding, and then some other charges that sound similar to that. These are very, very serious charges, and they come with sentences of 10 to 20 years in prison. The judge in the case is U.S. District Judge Tanya Chutkan. She is incredible. She has sentenced multiple January 6 rioters. She's known as like giving really harsh sentences. I even struggle to say the phrase really harsh, because like,
I mean, they fucking smeared shit on a government building.
Right. And that's what she's saying. She's just like she's even asked for, you know, harsher sentences than the prosecutor's offer. She's like, that's not enough. And this was sort of like not fully a roll of the dice. There are some not totally random who your judge is. It depends on some other factors like who's around. But this seems like kind of a most gratifying case scenario in terms of the judge selection. I saw a funny tweet yesterday that was like, showed a picture of the judge, and somebody was like, you know, Trump's team is wrestling his phone away from him, because she's also a Black woman, Jamaican American. And so I would not be surprised if he tries to target her, which can really only, unlike when he was president and when he would target people, it would really only hurt those people. I feel like if he targets his judge and starts saying things about her, it's gonna have real consequences for him.
Yeah, she looks like she don't play. Yeah. You know, so that, yeah, he can't say anything about her, because his ass will go to jail.
Exactly.
Yeah, and it's also funny for like to come full circle, because wasn't like one of the first controversies, was he president at the point where he said that shit about the judge who was Mexican American?
I think so. Definitely.
Do they even have like, can they even do that job?
Yeah. That was like one of his original one of the first bad things that he did in his capacity as president, not in his life.
Right.
Well, definitely not in his life. And it's also like, this is why karma is so real, Taylor Swift. Taylor Swift, you're onto something. But it's like, he has gotten away with so much and said so much fucking bullshit. And like, now, this is the ultimate test of her strength of like, here is a Black woman with short hair. Doesn't matter to me. No, but like, you know, totally. Donald Trump is going to say something about, he wants to say something so bad and he can't, because she will literally throw his ass in jail. She's thrown his fucking supporters in jail for years and years for less. Mm-hmm. And he's the fucking main source. So
absolutely. I still have to sort of like remind myself that like we talked a little bit about indictment fatigue last week, but like, you know, the things that he was indicted for the previous two times, he absolutely deserved to be indicted. His supporters are still going to say things like, oh, well, you know, they don't go after everybody who pays hush money. How come Trump? This is unfair. Oh, everybody has classified documents. They're always like being insincere when they say that, but nobody has done this.
No, maybe like in the Civil War.
But like, I don't think so. This is not anything you can ever compare. Like, oh, they didn't do this when JFK did it. They, no, nobody has done anything even the fuck close to this, short of, you know, like the treason in the Civil War.
They didn't even do that in Civil War. But they, yeah, but they didn't even storm the Capitol in the Civil War. That's the fucking thing.
They did. There was a war and they didn't. Capitol.
Even though there was a war, they didn't fucking do that. That's
yeah. What I will say for the Confederacy is that they seceded with their whole chest. They said it. They put it down on paper. They said, "We're leaving."
We're not gonna bang those doors down and shit on your desk. We're getting the fuck out of here.
Just like King Curtis and the wife swap. I am leaving.
Yes. Yes, they did it right out loud. They were like, "We're leaving." Whereas he, you know, tried to nefariously overturn results of an election.
Yeah, did you see Pence's statement yesterday? He was just like very sort of, just very like coolly, just yes, anybody who does this should not be president. It's like, bro,
shut up.
I know, and people
yawn.
These are the harshest terms in which Pence has criticized Trump far, and I'm like,
sure.
All right. So the big question now. So today will be the arraignment. I mean, I think she could like demand that he be detained. I don't think that's likely today. She'll, you know, just given as we know that would be bad for the country. There's like, we've talked about this before. There's so much to weigh in terms of like, we can get to, you know, the pros and cons of imprisoning him down the line, but in terms of whether he'll be like arrested and not let go tomorrow or today, that doesn't seem likely. But in terms of prison time, ultimately, if he's convicted. So Trump, with all of his indictments right now, has 78 total charges. He could theoretically face 641 years in prison. That's if he were convicted on all of them and given the maximum sentence. And this doesn't include the potential charges in Georgia that for trying to falsify the election outcome there. So, of course, 641 years sounds awesome, but none of these charges include a mandatory minimum, none of the charges that Trump is facing. But and as we've said before, like the judge is obligated to consider a lot of factors in her sentence, like the impact of jailing this person versus probation. It will be. Hopefully, an insane production to imprison a former president. Lots of Secret Service, lots of protection, if they want, I guess. And other things that the judge might consider are the fact that Trump, this is crazy that like Trump's the first time offender. That's banana. That's crazy.
Yeah, of what?
That's so funny.
Of what?
Sorry, that's just really.
Like, Jesus Christ. I guess he is because he hasn't been convicted of anything yet.
Oh my God. Yeah. This country is fucked up.
It's crazy. And also she will consider whether or not he is repentant or willing to take responsibility. That, of course, if you've ever watched a crime show, does factor into your sentencing. That being said, I've read that Jack Smith's team is like aggressively pushing for prison time. They don't want this to be a like, oh, he's a president, so probation for the rest of his life, and hopefully we can keep him under control. As we just discussed, nobody in the history of this country has ever done something like this, and this man needs to go to prison.
Can I say, in the Justin Trudeau of it all, there I have seen fan cams of how hot Jack Smith is.
Really?
I don't know if you have. Okay, go, Amanda.
It's tricky
say
for
it.
Me. I
say
already
it.
Have a only because of his job. Like, if he had a different boring job where he wasn't like being this like badass against the former seditious president, I don't think I would find him alluring.
I'm sorry, he's giving a little Castro to me.
Sorry,
sue me.
He looks nice in a suit.
I mean, don't sue me, Jack.
I like the facial hair, but yeah, I'm not totally smitten with Jack Smith, yeah. I guess I would say. Though I didn't actually like watch him in action. I know he like announced the charges the other day. I was like already out of the house, so I haven't like actually. Like, I don't know if it's a Joe Manchin situation, maybe, if I were to see him.
I think, yeah, like the Riz. It's the Riz.
I do also think it's that he looks like Brendan Hunt, Coach Beard, and Ted Lasso.
Okay, but Brendan
endearing.
Hunt.
No.
I would say this guy's hotter than Brendan Hunt to
Interesting.
Me.
Interesting. Yes. Yeah, he's got like a nice grovelly voice. And just like, he's also just like, if you look at his background, he has prosecuted people at The Hague. Like, this guy doesn't give a fuck. Like, he is really solid against this. And that is a, that adds to the Riz factor.
Do you know if by pushing for prison time, they mean like actually putting him in a facility, or that he is actually under house arrest and has to like remain at Mar-a-Lago?
Good question. I was just saying prison and probation, but I guess there's something in between, which would be like house arrest. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause that's the thing that feels like if he's going to be technically imprisoned, that feels like what would happen, just because it seems like, is there a facility right now that is able to accept a president? Like, what does that mean?
So.
I mean, we don't know. Like, what does it mean to put it? I think it would be great if they made him go to straight up jail, but I'm just like, is that even really on the table?
Yeah.
As a,
they couldn't keep, I mean, Jeffrey Epstein probably killed himself, but it's like, it would be very hard to keep him safe. Not that I give a shit, but like,
I don't know. I mean, I feel like, I don't know. I feel like Trump would get like all the good cigarettes and all the stuff like immediately. I think that the best case scenario plea deal, which would be great for all of America, is if he was on house arrest for the rest of his life
and can't ever tweet or and, like,
well, I don't know if they can control that because X is lawless.
Because he could try to be president from house arrest easier than prison.
Sure, but don't you have to like go to shit like campaign things, and don't you have to like be in Washington and all of that? So I feel like it will be harder to. I feel like if he, this is just like my thinking, but like if he is the nominee, like it will be a tight race, and if Biden is pounding pavement and out there, and Trump's like stuck in Mar-a-Lago. Can't fucking leave, can't do shit. Like, I don't think that he would win again because I feel like it would be a tight race. Like, it was a tight race in 2020, and that's with Trump having rallies that literally killed Herman Cain. But, like, with this election, like, if Trump can't do fucking rallies and any of that shit and has to be stuck at Mar-a-Lago, he's not going to open his house up to fucking all his weirdo people for them to smear shit on the walls of Mar-a-Lago. But so this is what I'm thinking. I'm thinking best case scenario, they should do house arrest.
And I also think that it is pretty equal. And he does have his diehard supporters that are going to vote for him no matter what. But like you said, the race is going to be so close. And I think there is going to be at least a small amount of people who, I mean, I feel like if you ever consider voting for Trump, you don't count as a swing voter, but who might just be like, I don't want a president who is detained. That is not good for the country if we're going to war. Like, I am hoping, because you know how like the last election was what, a margin of like 60,000 votes in three states because of how the Electoral College votes? Like, I think there are probably at least 60,000 people who know like better to have, even no much, however much you hate Joe Biden, better to have Sleepy Joe than a person who's literally detained. And so that's the question a lot of people are asking.
Or stay home. All the Republicans will stay home.
Totally. Can he serve as president if he is just convicted? And he can serve as president if he is found or pleads guilty to these crimes. There's nothing in the Constitution that stops an indicted or convicted person from serving. However, noteworthy here, if he is convicted of felonies, he lives in Florida, which prohibits former felons from voting. I mean, its constituents did pass a law saying that former felons, formerly incarcerated people, should be able to vote. But
Ron DeSantis fucking,
basically did some shady shit where it's you basically have to like get your, if you are a formerly incarcerated person and you want to start voting again, you have to go through a process that's basically impossible. So I just think that that's just like the party he supports would ban him from voting in Florida.
I think it's kind of ironic that like if this all goes down, like he can't be president because of some stupid shit his party did, like that would
totally
be.
Totally. So whether he could actually win an election or fulfill the duties of the presidency from a prison cell, as we've discussed, there's not an obvious answer, but the big issue is that, you know, if he can't leave a place, I think there are duties, I believe, that like it feels like he needs to be there. Does somebody just bring all the bills he needs to sign? Like, it would practically be a very weird situation.
So it's interesting because I did, as we were talking, Google the rules of house arrest. And so, okay. if he's on house arrest while he's running, then I think he's in a really bad situation, because you're only allowed to leave house arrest for like medical appointments. You can meet your lawyer. You can do some religious stuff. And then there's also an employment exemption to like go to your job. Like you can technically like work and come back. So I wonder if he was to actually become president, would he be allowed to like technically like go do president things?
Exactly.
Because that's his job. That's all like part of the weird hypothetical of it, where it's like, and then what does that mean? Does that mean he's allowed to like go live at the White House and basically do everything because all of it is his job?
Right. If he's on house, so if he's on house arrest and he wins the presidency, I mean, I guess when you're put on house arrest, they're not like, you cannot leave this address. House arrest is wherever your house is. So I guess if he's like, my house is 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue,
then is he in house arrest in the White House? And then he's allowed to leave to go do president.
He certainly can't leave the country. And then that's when it's going to be, but like, he's already been. This is such a doomsday scenario. It's like he's already fucking like lies about. Yeah, I know exactly.
Oh gosh, that is, you know, people generally saying that's something that's untested. Certainly something we do not want to test.
Today's episode of American Fever Dream is brought to you by Nuuly. Have you ever felt that fast fashion ick, but can't always afford the super high-end stuff? I have a solution for you. It's Nuuly. Nuuly has everything you need to bring your closet up to speed for the season without breaking the bank. Free your closet of impulse purchases and skip the buyer's remorse by renting instead. Nuuly is a subscription rental service, and for just $98 a month, you get your choice of any six styles. They also have inclusive sizing up to 5X, as well as petite and maternity. You get fast, free shipping and returns, and professional cleaning in Nuuly's state-of-the-art laundering facility. No laundry for you to worry about. This is the best. You just put it back in your box, send it out, and before you know it, you've got your next one. And you always have the option to buy what you love for sometimes up to 75% off. I bought the Rachel Antonoff pasta puffer from them. I was obsessed with it, like everybody who tries it is, and it was completely sold out everywhere else. So I felt like I really, really had an in there. So thank you, Nuuly. Nuuly is an amazing value at $98 a month for any six styles. And right now you can get $20 off your first month of Nuuly when you sign up with the code FEVERDREAM20. Just go to NUULY.com. That's Nuuly with two U's, and enter the code FEVERDREAM20 and sign up to get $20 off your first month. That's NUULY.com, Nuuly with two U's with code FEVERDREAM20. Nuuly subscription clothing rental, change your clothes.
We will get into women's rights and women's wrongs now. This has been a very tough week for Lizzo fans, which is basically everybody. Three of Lizzo's former dancers have filed a lawsuit against her, her production company, and her dance captain. The former employees, two of whom were let go from the recent tour and one resigned, they're alleging sexual, religious, and racial harassment, as well as disability discrimination, assault, and false imprisonment. So quite a litany. The dancers describe a work environment that was, quote, overtly sexual and made them uncomfortable. One outing described is to a strip club in Amsterdam, where a dancer said Lizzo kept urging her to touch a performer's breasts. And this is also where people claim that they were urged to catch dildos and eat bananas from performers' vaginas. This morning, I wanted to get more information specifically on the bananas part. And the website delish.com had covered it because I guess it was a food story.
I mean, you know what? You find your beat. You find your beat.
Listen, if you're listening and you do SEO at Delish, good job, because you absolutely won Lizzo Vagina Banana this morning. These group outings to strip clubs, they just seem fairly frequent. And people were saying they were not technically mandatory, but, you know, they felt like if they didn't go, they were losing favor with Lizzo, their boss. There are also allegations of weight discrimination. One dancer said Lizzo told her that she seemed less bubbly and vivacious, which she took as a reference to weight gain, because I guess Lizzo had referenced that previously. As for the dance captain, her name is Shirlene Quigley. She's also accused of religious harassment. She's, I guess, a devout Christian who seemed to want everyone around her to be too and singled out non-believers. But also this super religious person also partook in overtly sexual behavior that made others uncomfortable. So this lawsuit was filed by three dancers. But there are also some former members of Lizzo's team who have spoken out to say that they had similar experiences and sort of confirming that kind of work environment. So we'll get to her statement in a moment, but this was really hard to read for everybody.
Yeah. You want to go first, Millie? Millie and I have been off mic discussing this a lot because I think we both feel pretty torn.
Yeah, I guess I'm just personally like, there's just a lot here, and it's just like requires a lot of nuance because on one end, like, yeah, you don't want the things that I've heard about the actual places they're going seem similar to like clubs that we have in New York. Like one of the most famous ones is called The Box, where it's like a little unorthodox performing and like it's a little out there and stuff, like not necessary. It's like more cabaret, so like whatever. But yeah, I just feel like the thing that's really like intentional by the legal team of the dancers is that they are, I mean, the legal team of the dancers, this guy, you know, his like beat, his whole thing, his specialty is like suing celebrities. And not to say that there's no weight, but like some of the crazier allegations were like against the dance captain. Like,
yeah,
I've seen videos of the dance captain and seen her Instagram and like, she's a little crazy. She's a little like
she's giving religious harassment.
She's giving her like religious harassment. And the thing is too, like the most egregious thing that I feel like Lizzo actually did that actually was not great was the things at the strip club. And I think it's just something where, you know, your boss shouldn't like, on one end, it's like, yeah, you know, if you have a work outing, like you're not required to go, but it, you know, that's like part of the reality is like, you have to make an appearance or whatever. The other thing is like, because they're on tour and like tours last a year or 2 years and you're traveling the world with people and you're doing physical labor and you're experiencing all this stuff. Like, it does feel like the lines between boss and friend and family and all that get blurred. And I just feel like Lizzo probably forgot that these people aren't her friends and that she has power over a situation and she can't do that. Like, that was more my thing. But some other things that I felt like personally, you know, when people were also coming out and were like, oh, I worked with her and she seemed very arrogant or she seemed very like, that's not relevant. And also I'm just like, she's an international pop star. Like, you cannot be an international pop star and be a fat black woman and not be arrogant. Like, there, it's just not possible. Like, you have to be up your own ass to do anything because people are constantly talking shit about her and her body. So that's not relevant. So I feel like the most relevant and harming thing for actually Lizzo is the strip club thing, which I kind of am like, I can understand how it got there. It's not okay and it's inappropriate. The dance captain stuff, like, Lizzo is in charge of her staff and she should know and like not have that environment. But at the same time, like, the thing about like the weight harassment and all of that, like, it's very blurry intentionally to get us to like, or to get the public opinion against Lizzo so she can settle quicker.
Yeah, I have felt similarly torn. I feel like there are like three camps of allegations here. One is like legitimate workplace malfeasance that is documented and in these allegations. That includes like the religious harassment from Quigley. That includes, there's an incident where one of the gals was fired for recording, but that's actually like a disability accommodation that she has to like record notes because she like needs that for an anxiety disorder that she has. And then I know there's allegations from the dancers that the production team made like racially coded statements and stuff to them and that the production team is all white. And I'm just inclined to believe that that could be the case if they're saying that. Then I think there's another camp, which is like the like weird banana related sexual situations, which I'm kind of falling in the place that Millie described, which is like, I think that Lizzo lost the thread of what her role as a boss versus a friend is. I think she was treating these outings like, I'm out with my girls, like, yeah, touch her boobs, do this, da da da. And it's like, you can't do that because they are your employees. And I get even, it, well, I think we're going to talk about her statement in a minute, but in her statement, she's like, I'm a sexual person. And it's like, that's so great. But you actually are a boss.
Nobody can be a sexual person at work. Like, even if it's part of your
brand. And I get it. Yeah. But it's like, there's that. And then the third camp that I just wanted to say is kind of like these vague hypocrisy allegations, which do feel less relevant to me. One of them being the weight shaming, which is like, it is hard to say that she's like, oh, you called me less bubbly, or someone said that I was like they took it as a weight related comment, which like, that it's just hard to say, that lives in a gray
it's hard to
area
prove. Yeah.
to me. And it is hard to prove. That doesn't mean it's not true. It's just, that's hard to say. And then this world of like, she's arrogant, she's rude, she's this, which I think someone should be arrogant and rude? Not really. But do I think that the behavior is crazy for a pop star? Also not really. Like, I know of celebrities that my friends have had to work with who are very difficult to work with and arrogant and rude. There's all these stories now, people are talking because of all the Ariana Grande stuff. Like, for years, Ariana Grande has abused employees at Disneyland. And like, because there's like there's a specific type of Disney staff that takes celebrities around when they're in the park. And I guess she has a history of being a piece of shit to them. It's just kind of like, why would Lizzo have to be the one to go down for what kind of seems like run-of-the-mill pop star behavior? Is it because people want to take her down because she is a fat Black woman who's who has stood for all of these things? But also, was there a path to fame for Lizzo without her standing for all of these things? Like, it's not like Lizzo could have become who she is today and been like, I'm not going to address my weight or being a Black woman or any of it. It's like, that's a role she took on, but it's also a role society put on her. It's like the thing people always talk about, where it's like, you can just, and Millie talks about this all the time, like, you can just be existing and someone's like, brave.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Queen. You're like, just post, like, living your life.
Yes. A lot of her values were professed, but also a lot of them were just assumed based on her kind of like presentation and her statement. You know, in her statement, I'm going to say she didn't really take responsibility for anything. She referred to the allegations as false and sensationalized and claimed that these employees were the ones who were warned about unprofessional behavior. I think we need more details about that. She's implied that the firings of these people were a result of underperformance. She also wrote, I am very open with my sexuality and expressing myself, but I cannot accept or allow people to use that openness to make me out to be something I am not. There's nothing I take more seriously than the respect we deserve as women in the world. She also denied the allegations of weight shaming. She did sort of suggest like, yeah, I have high standards and I'm going to not be apologetic about that. I mean, like you guys said, I think that there are some of these things that sound like serious legal issues, but most of it to me sounds like an HR disaster that should absolutely be addressed and is not acceptable. And this is not an acceptable workplace. You can't, in any job, you kind of, once you get high enough up, you're like, you know, I actually can't go to that happy hour because I'm the boss. And that's for them to like, you know, there's just.
Or the happy hour is like a dinner, not a strip club.
And she should have known better. She should have known better that when your boss says, eat a banana out of someone's vagina, that is different than when somebody, your bestie, says it on a bachelor party. When you have a whole crowd of people chanting for you to touch somebody's breast, and you also know that this is a really intense environment where people get fired for underperformance, and you think, maybe if I can make sure I'm favorable to my boss in this scenario, that's not good. And she should, and it might be, it's illegal, and she should have known that. But I also, you know, think that many people before her have been given a pass for the same or worse behavior. And I think that she owes something to these former dancers and needs to figure something out. But yeah, it is a blurry line between what is an HR issue, what is a crime, what should be expected in this type of, because yeah, there was, like everything I just said, that behavior is unacceptable. But then, like you said, like people would be like, yeah, I can confirm this. She was really hard to work with. That is not a crime. That has nothing to do with any of this. It can probably color how you interpret other behavior. It sounds like she got really upset when like, I guess two of the dancers quit and then one resigned. And then it sounded like there was a really intense confrontation between that dancer and Lizzo, where one of them felt physically threatened. And yeah, like, yeah, none of that's fucking okay. But it's like, who is Lizzo's HR director? I don't know how that works. Does the company have HR? Something serious happened that needs to be addressed. And it really sucks. And it's not the first time we have or will hear about a person whose professed values don't seem to match how they are leading. But like, first time managers, like it's hard. And like, I'm not saying, like, I'm not belittling any of this, but yeah, I'm curious about kind of like the future and more people that come forward to kind of confirm it. Cause I'm sort of seeing a lot of kind of like fights and comment sections about this between people who say like Lizzo is canceled, and there's a bit of a complicated nature to some of this.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess I'm just like, I hear what you're saying and like, not to dissent or anything, but it's also like
dissent away.
Yeah, not to dissent here, but it's also just like, it is an HR disaster, but, and there should be a level of professionalism, but I just don't think it's held to the same standard as a 9-to-5 office environment. Mm. I think by nature of like, because then if you start going there, it's like, well, the work outfits are not appropriate. You know what I mean? Because it is a costume stage, you know, thing, and it's music and it's dancing and it's twerking. So like, it is just an untraditional work environment. So with that untraditional work environment, you do, like, there are norms that are a little bit different. Not to say that like you can't have any decorum or anything, but I think that's also something that people need to be reminded of, is that it's, you know, it's not like your boss at your management firm. It's like, it's this woman who has wrote songs about having sex, and you're performing in lingerie on stage in front of hundreds of thousands of people. Like, the line that's crossed is a little bit different. And yeah, like, another thing too is that, you know, me and Lisa were discussing online, is that these dancers were the ones from her Amazon Prime, you know? So these are people who also don't have a lot of professional experience, which is good, you know, like Lizzo, it was a great show. I think it literally won an Emmy because it was giving all these different people an opportunity to perform that they wouldn't have got. But like, when you're in the biz, you know, and that's why I feel a little bit like a jaded Gen Xer. Mm-hmm. Like, when you're in the biz, like, there is a certain thing that you kind of like know first, you know? So
totally.
I just feel like half of these things too are like, if she was a male performer, we wouldn't even be no one would discuss about like she's rude or something.
For our final segment today, we are joined by Claire Watkins, a staff writer for Just Women Sports, who has been covering the Women's World Cup. Lots to cover and talk about. Thanks for joining us, Claire.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me.
So lots going on here. What would you say is kind of the storyline right now for the U.S. team at the Women's World Cup? Because it seems to be a bit fraught.
Yeah, I think one of the interesting things when a team is underperforming or seen to be underperforming is that the analysis actually gets trickier, right? Mm. Because we're not in camp. We don't always know exactly what's going wrong. We just kind of have to respond to what we see on the field. I would say internally from the U.S., survive in advance, right? It's not always looked super pretty. They've been pretty defensively sound. They feel like they have a game plan that can win any game that they play. I think in the larger level, it's who is this team right now? This doesn't look like the team from 2019. Looks a little bit closer to the team that got bronze in 2021. But yeah, just sort of like, what is this identity of this U.S. team? Because I'm not sure we've seen it yet.
Yeah. What factors do you think, or are people saying, might be contributing to this underperformance or perception of underperformance? You know, how much of it are real tactical issues in the games, which I've seen a lot of people referring to the coaching, and how much of it owes to the fact that other teams around the world are getting better?
It's both. Yeah. This is actually, I think, I hope that US fans can kind of see the forest for the trees and just see that this is awesome. What we've seen so far, we've seen upsets like crazy, Brazil out, Germany out, Canada out. Like the US making it to the round of 16 is actually sort of an anomaly in the fact that they didn't play particularly well and they still advanced out of their group. Mm-hmm. And so I think that that is the bigger story. The bigger story of not only is the gap getting shorter between the US and maybe other quote unquote top footballing countries, but just with resources and I think advancements even just in coaching level for some of the nations that have struggled in the past, everyone is better. No game is guaranteed. Mm-hmm. But then in addition to that, there's like the eyes test, right? Which I think what US fans want is, of course, they want to win the World Cup. But they also, this is a stage to show off what your country can do. Right? What your country can do in the sport of soccer. And even if the US does advance out of this weekend, I think that fans feel like we haven't seen that yet from them. And I think that that is the issue that we're talking about, the tactical, the very conservative tactical approach, players not playing to the best of their ability, and also just kind of maybe a roster that's a little bit more lopsided than we thought.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. How is the roster kind of proving to be more lopsided than maybe anticipated?
I think you can see it. People might be familiar with how Julie Ertz has, she's won two World Cups, right? She's won one as a center back and she's won one as a midfielder. When she returned to the team earlier this year, people expected her to move back into that midfield role. Kind of unexpectedly, the first time she started as a center back for the US in 2023 was the first game of the World Cup. Mm-hmm. And everyone went a little bit like, oh, so maybe there's less faith in this Alana Cook, Naomi Girma center back duo than we thought. And Vladko Andonovski, who's the head coach of the U.S., has stuck with that. He made an adjustment right away. He hasn't really been using his bench very much, which indicates that maybe he doesn't trust them to change the game because we've seen very, very static lineups. And so I think those elements of the roster, just due to injuries and maybe some decisions made over the last 3 years of development, that the bench isn't being utilized and we're seeing players get pulled into positions that they don't normally play because perhaps the coach feels like he doesn't have somebody else who can play there.
Mm-hmm. What is one of the drawbacks of like the bench not being utilized? Is that players are just like too gassed by the end? Yeah.
100%. A World Cup is brutal. They're playing a game every 5 days. You're not really supposed to do that in soccer. That's why this only happens so often. It's too short. And so if you're not utilizing the bench, it's like two issues, right? Where the starters are set. And that isn't necessarily the worst thing in the world. We saw England win the Euros last year with a very, very set starting 11. But if you're not taking players off at 60 minutes, if you're not taking players off at 75 minutes, the weight of their legs starts to get very, very heavy. And I think what we saw against that Portugal game where the US tied 0-0 at the end of the group stage was as much about tired minds and tired legs as it was just the tactical issues.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, I always love watching the US team in the World Cup, and I've had to kind of remind myself that just because they might not be on the path that we'd hope, this World Cup is still really exciting on a global scale. What else has been really fun for you to watch?
I think it is that the rise of, again, I'm like putting this in air quotes because perception versus reality is always the same, but the sort of those mid-level teams. One of the best games I saw all tournament was Colombia upsetting Germany. That game was fantastic. Or South Africa making it out of the group stage, Jamaica making it out of the group stage, Morocco making it out of the group stage. All of these, we know we've seen a debutante make it through to the knockout rounds. And it's fascinating too, because there were concerns mostly fairly from the Western world that there were going to be issues with expanding the Women's World Cup. This is the largest World Cup field we've ever seen. So we've seen new teams get these opportunities and they're showing up and they're competing. And so for me, I think the biggest thing, if the US, you know, nobody in America wants this, but if they don't make it past this weekend, there are so many teams to root for that are so exciting. And I think that that has to be the larger takeaway.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell our audience, if they don't know, who Marta is and why that player is just so incredible and there's a lot of attention on them right now?
Yeah, of course. Marta, oh gosh, I could go for a very long time. So Marta has been playing in World Cups since 2003. She plays for Brazil. She also actually has played in the United States for a number of years. She plays for the Orlando Pride. So Marta, this is maybe a good place to start, which is that if you're learning about Marta now and you want to see her play and you live in the US, she's going to be playing in the US for the rest of the year. That's where she plays.
That's awesome.
Football. But she, I think most American fans met Marta for the first time in reality in 2007 when Brazil thumped the United States in the semifinals of the 2000 World Cup 4-0. I think people remember that as like the Hope Solo Brianna Scurry game. Yeah. But what it really was the Marta game. And she is a creative. She was a creative, had creative flair that was never really seen before. She was fast. She was quick on the ball. Her feet were magnificent. And you can also see it in her longevity, right? She played in World Cups from 2003 to 2023. And what happens a lot of times when soccer players get a little bit older is they start going back on the field. So you start as a forward because you have that explosivity, you have those quick feet, you have the ability to beat defenders. And then you kind of sit back further to become a playmaker. And Marta has been able to do both. I would say that when I speak to young soccer players in the US and abroad, and you say, who was your idol growing up? It's Marta.
That's so cool. And I think she made a statement about that, right? Like she was like, I had nobody. So the fact that they said that. And my favorite, she also, I tell this to anyone that will listen, she has the most goals in a World Cup, men or women, right?
Yep, exactly. Yeah,
that's badass. I mean, you mentioned she plays for the US. If people find themselves, you know, really taken by this tournament and want to be more involved with women's soccer, what are some other exciting developments? I know that like Angel City is a really exciting team and Bay FC is coming up, which is really cool. What are some other interesting developments that people should be following?
Yeah, if you live in the US and you're stoked on women's soccer, I always just say there's the NWSL is expanding. It's getting bigger every single year. Right now there are 12 teams. Next year there are going to be 14. They're hoping for 16 in 2025. So look for a local market. And what I say to people is I think there's a concept of soccer in the United States as being, it is an emerging sport. I mean, frankly, it is, right? Especially on the men's side. But some of the best players in the world play here. Half of the Brazilian women's national team plays here.
Wow.
99% of the U.S. women's national team plays here. We have teams in the middle of the country. We have a team in Louisville. One of the Golden Boot leaders plays in Louisville, Kentucky. It's incredible. And so I always recommend people, if you're in the United States and you want to see more of this, try to catch a game live. They're cheap. They're easily accessible. Try to catch a game live. You can also watch on Viacom owns the TV rights right now. So you can watch sometimes on CBS, sometimes on Paramount Plus. And then, yeah, I think it's that. It's just getting involved locally. I always recommend that. And I think that there's a wide availability to do that, especially in the US, which is really exciting.
Yeah. I know people, including our listeners, are really hype on this tournament and the Women's College Basketball Tournament have been really big moments this year. What else is Just Women's Sports going to be covering really on top of for the rest of 2023?
Yeah, once the World Cup is over, it's all
taking
NWSL.
A nap,
I know. Okay. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Like sleeping for 4 days straight. And then, I'm excited for some friendlier
getting
time
off
zones.
Australia time.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I think once the World Cup is over, it's full straight ahead for WNBA and NWSL playoffs. So WNBA, the Las Vegas Aces right now are having like an unprecedented successful season. They are only the second team in WNBA history to have the current record that they have. They've only lost twice. So watching them, they got the New York super team and the WNBA, there's going to be some really cool. Yeah. They're playing like what, tonight or tomorrow? It's going to be fantastic. But, so the playoffs and then NWSL playoffs as well. So I think that one of the cool things, especially about NWSL playoffs, is it kind of marries this American idea of knockout rounds. We love knockout rounds. We love a championship final, but also combining it with the sport of soccer, which is really cool.
Yeah. I mean, sports are always the most fun when they're the most competitive. So it's really fun to see that happening more with the women that are playing. Thanks so much for joining us. This was awesome.
Yeah, of course. Thanks, you guys.
Perfect. That is our show. Until the end of democracy, I'm Amanda Duberman.
I'm Elise Morales.
I'm Millie Tamaris.
And this is the Betches Up Podcast. Bye. The Betches Up Podcast is produced by Amanda Duberman, Sean Kilby, Jorge Morales Pico, and Rebecca Sousmacat. Editing by Rebecca Sousmacat. Social media by Amanda Duberman and Bridget Swartz. Be sure to follow at Betches_Sup on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And send us your emails at suppod@betches.com. Betches.